The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Secure the template. Set the backside guide to appropriate lock set basket. The backside guide tabs include setting the jig. Possession template. What the hell am I reading?
Scusi. Babbit a boopy.
We don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race. And the human race is filled with passion.
For the pellet with the poisons in the vessel with the pestle, the chalice with the palace has the brew that is true.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Capello.
I was continuing to shrink.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Capello.
Still a human being? Or was I the man of the future?
Bursts of radiation, other clouds drifting across seas and continents. Would other beings follow me into this vast new world? So close, the infinitesimal and the infinite. But suddenly I knew they were really the two ends of the same concept. The unbelievably small and the unbelievably vast eventually meet. like the closing of a gigantic circle. I looked up, as if somehow I would grasp the heavens, the universe, worlds beyond number, God's silver tapestry spread across the night. And in that moment, I knew the answer to the riddle of the infinite. I had thought in terms of man's own limited dimension. I had presumed upon nature that existence begins and ends is man's conception, not nature's. And I felt my body dwindling, melting, becoming nothing. My fears melted away, and in their place came acceptance. All this vast majesty of creation, it had to mean something. And then I meant something too. Yes, smaller than the smallest, I meant something too. To God, there is no zero. I still exist.
Cthulhu Chronicles.
And that? Who's that?
That's Cthulhu over there. You know what I mean?
Smaller than the smallest. Postmodernists, you sunburnt sicklemen freezing your guts off. Welcome to Bard of Broadcasting, truly on the air right now. Later than you think. My name is Frank Cthulhu. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Like it or not, I'm here to stay for almost 2 hours, and it will be exceptionally rewarding to a few. Stay with us. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet the City, from Othello, and into every bordello, I bid you. I wonder where that originated. I say hello. I remember an old girlfriend of mine had a father, and he used to go, I say good night. Well, it's time to go. It's the hang guy whistle. I say good night. I remember that voice. Of course, you don't know if I'm imitating it correctly or close to or not. I say good night. It was very deep, and I still don't have a deep voice. And he was younger than me at the time, but his voice was deep. I say good night. I don't say good night, but at least it's not like I bid you farewell. That sounds pretentiously poetic, and we're going to talk about pretentiously poetic on the show for 2 hours. You're going to say, like, what is this going to be? An English lesson? Is this going to be some kind of a dull, dragged out? Talk about things I don't like. Well, you know, you could always say that when this show comes on. Yeah, I have no idea. But I guarantee you, it should be interesting from any number of points of view. And I say that on this particular show, you should really have your Cthulhu Chronicles notebook with you. So go out and get it. And if you don't have a prescribed notebook, you don't have one devoted notebook, then get one. Or use a bunch of piece of papers or use one of those back sides of calendars that say notes. But take some notes and write down this stuff. I guarantee you later on you're going to have a blast. Time will just fly by as you zip through the internet, your internet, whenever that internet may be and whoever may connect you to that internet. You'll have a great time looking at it and things will get into your mind that you don't even recognize. And then later on you'll find them, see them, you'll explore them. And before you know it, whammo's ammo, which is a term I made up because I don't think anyone's ever said whammo's ammo. Maybe presto. That was presto. What are some other exclamations? We're going to have some fun with this. Okay, this is not going to be a rancorous. Rancorous? Can you make rancor into an OUS? I don't know. We'll have to find that out. Well, can you say find that out? We'll have to discover that as we move along, trying to speak as well as we can in the English given to us by our, I guess, parents and those around us and schools. So Hello Poetry will be on, and I'm calling it that, because this is not a thing I just got inside of me. This is not a bolt or a jolt, it's not a flash thing. It's just something that's been with me a long time. I'm going to talk about it tonight, and I know a lot of you are going to be interested and even find out how interested you really are in things like poetry as we knock down all the garbage and weeds. I'd say weeds. Like, you know, we go through the, we get our sickle, not a sickle, our machete, and go through the very weedy jungle of what is considered poetic in pop culture and get down to the nitty gritty. My name is Frank Cotolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of this show. And this is Cotolo Chronicles. And it's what I do. I chronicle. This is the chronicling of me. I do the chronicling. It's not the chronicling of me because I don't do this. This show's not about me. Although I will express certain opinions and I implore you to respond to them. fcotolo@yahoo.com or any other place that you could find me. I'm all over as they say, the web is lousy with Cotolo, as it says on one of those sound bites somewhere out there in internet land. I just want to say this one thing, though, because I noticed someone, a good friend of mine, who is on my Facebook page and has been on the show and will be on the show again and again and again, I know, sometime in the future, a man by the name of Dusty Nathan, who himself was a radio person, brought it to my attention through Facebook. You can learn things, remember things. Okay, this is not totally, the social networking thing is not necessarily weighed on the bad side. But he made note that it was, I don't know whether it's a year or 2 years or what have you, but we're on the anniversary of Warren Zevon's death. Now, those of you who don't know Warren Zevon or didn't know him should get acquainted with him. You can do it at YouTube or any other place. I'm sure he's got a Wikipedia page or what have you. This was a rather simple rock. I don't even want to say rock. I don't know what to classify Warren Zevon in. But anyway, you could look him up, and you could read about him and listen to some of his songs. I guess what's really gets me about Warren Zevon. I was never a large. I don't know if you could say big fan, but you can't say large fan. I was never a fan, a raving fan, a serious fan of Warren Zevon. And through all my journeys in the land of music and in the business, I never met Warren Zevon. And I never thought much of Warren Zevon because I did not look into some of the things he did until very late and in his life. Hopefully not late in my life. But that's what I bring up. Because the thing I do remember about Warren Zevon is that what he was diagnosed with, a fatal disease, some kind of cancer, something that they knew they could not correct. And then he decided at that point that he had time to do one more what then, when an album, you know, collection of songs, let's say, you don't know what to call them anymore. Did a CD, an album. I still like to call them an album because even if they're on a CD, it's a collection of tunes that, you know, album is a very appropriate name for a collection of tunes. So he decided to do one more collection of tunes. And they're just wonderful goodbye songs. The fact that he knew he was dying, there's a very poignant YouTube selection of Zevon, who was a very big, who was very often, and he was a friend of David Letterman's show, and was very often on David Letterman's show. And he had his last appearance, I think, in the world, doing any kind of music live, was on that show. And I remember seeing the last appearance he made. And I was touched by his strength and courage, because that certainly is the kind of thing that, I mean, that's like living poetry, and I hope to be able to grasp, that's the thing, you know, courage is a wonderful thing. But Warren Zevon, you just got to watch it. If you watch this YouTube piece, if you see him talking and performing, and then listen to some of his stuff, he's very accepting at one point. I think he went through whatever those stages are, acceptance, bargaining, you know, what is it, five stages, which ends in acceptance. But he certainly made a very solemn and natural, even though he was dying from a disease, he made a very natural situation of his dying, and was eventually, he didn't sit in the hospital anywhere. He lived at home. He died with his family around him and went off to sleep, eternal sleep, as we all will do, as it will come to every man, said Hemingway, death, as it will come to every man. So, and I think that his bravery and courage in that respect certainly is admirable. And it was very, very sad. I wasn't even, like I said, a long following fan or involved with him. He just seemed to be a person that I was just hoping, not wishing, I was hoping they could somehow be inspired by the strength of his dying. And that, you know, we all, you know, none of us, none of us want to die. B, well, I don't think. I mean, ultimately, if you're doing okay, in the brain department, the emotion department, as odd as that might seem, because nobody's doing well in the emotion department, but, radically, universally, put together, which is why I tried, and I know I had a little problem there in the opening with the closing monologue of one of my favorite movies, a science fiction film which has ramifications. We've talked about it here 100 times, maybe 101 times. The Incredible Shrinking Man. I just had a problem with the buffering of that. I don't know. I mean, I couldn't imagine that suddenly there were 30,000 people watching this one clip, you know. So I don't know how that works. But the infinitesimal, the naturalness of it. Now, that all fits into play with the stuff we're going to talk about today, because these issues are the kinds of things that are addressed by poetry and how the actual classics should never be compared with classics, as in the classic rock poetry genre, I guess call it a genre, or whatever that might be. So Warren Zevon, let's just dedicate this show, because Warren was a good pop poet, and he did wonderful little things with words, as many of these that we're going to mention, these lyricists, as we're going to mention, many of them are terrific for song. Okay, but remember poetry. Well, don't remember if you don't know this. We'll get into it. Poetry as a craft, as an art, is meant to be said aloud, lyrically, no music. Sans the music, just the words. And that's the difference, because pop music, especially pop music, has a tendency. A song. What is a song? You know, there are many poems in the past that are songs. Percy Bysshe Shelley wrote Song of, and it's a song, but it's a lyric. The song is the melody. The melody is the beat. The beat is the tempo and how it is spoken and the sound of the words. Many times, in the old days, in the classics, it was never thought of putting music to that. That was just distraction. See, so pure poetry, the classics, who show you exactly how to do it. And you know, if you read the classics and you just want to be a lyricist or a pop, in pop, whatever you want to do, in song, you can learn a lot. You'll learn the most from them, and you can take from them. As being a neo-postmodernist, that's what we do. Remember, amateurs imitate, professionals steal. And there's no way, I use the word steal with all due respect to all the copyrighted material. I don't want to get into the legal stuff because that really gets nuts. Inspiration should not be patented or copyrighted, and it can't be. My name is Frank Atolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of this show, a show that is in between the lines. The things we talk about are in between the lines of all the stuff and all the chatter. Chatter is a great word. The people at Menwith Hill in Great Britain, the English, the Americans, that American base over there, going through tons and tons, I don't even have tons, billions of bytes, billions and billions of bytes of things like this, listening to this show, bytes, things going, emails, talking of phones, chatter. They call it chatter. There's a lot of chatter, not buzz. Buzz is different. A lot of chatter. I love that when they said there's a lot of chatter. If they talk about a specific thing, especially when they're looking for terrorist connections and talking plans, plots, whatever. It's a lot of chatter on the lines. All that chatter that comes from talk radio, most of it, I'm not going to say fear-mongering most of it just bloated. I think bloated chatter. The stuff that everyone's talking about. So if you turn on this guy, turn on Tom Smith, your conservative guy who's talking and being a very great American and whatever, or even in Canada, there's conservatives everywhere. Wherever you turn on that talk radio and that conservative guy is talking about God and country, by golly, hey, Britannia rules the sea, and wherever else. They're talking politics, they're talking opinion, they're talking things, they're talking stuff. We're in between those things. Wake up, it's night, we're talking in between the lines. And that goes for the liberals too, because they're like all the way on the other side. And although people would consider this, and me, performing and I say performing, because don't ever forget it, all those guys, they're performers. All those radio guys are performers. They say personality radio is dead. It isn't dead. Personality music radio may be dead, but personality radio isn't dead. Because the Bach Bimbaughs and I'm not mentioning real names, the Bach Bimbaughs and the Crown Harmonies, all those guys and the girls, okay, Ingram, whatever her name might be, and the one. They're all just, they're doing an act. They're doing a dance, doing a song and dance. They're performing. So don't, and they're looking for people to support them so they can make money and their sponsors can make money. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that in between those lines, I chronicle and I talk about the things that they're not going to be talking about. And the people we have on our show are also in between the lines. Which leads me to the fact that we were supposed to have Heather Drane on the show this evening. Now, Heather's run into that bug that's been going around and has just not felt 100%. Heather Drane, God bless her, Buddha bless her, the heavens bless her, fate, eternity bless her, whatever. She wants to be 100%, and I respect that. And I want her to be 100% because she's a wonderful and very knowledgeable pop culture expert, and so, and with always between the lines. We find them over the next couple of months, we hope. Everything remains copacetic and on target. Certain people will be back. And again, we're going to get, you'll see. CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com is where you can find out what's happening here. You find me, of course, at Facebook, where you could be my friend. Just go there. Every day, more people coming over, and we're just saying, hey, come on over. Hey, come on over. And what else? You know, everywhere else. I'm on Twitter at Frank Cotolo, Cotolo.tumblr.com, fcotolo@yahoo.com. I'm around, and you should come see me and be my friend. You can get us there and talk to us in any respect you want to do that, to that. As usual, I'm having to handle the entire everything by myself here, and that I'm not saying that because I expect a glitch. But as always, this show will be repeated later on from the SRN Media Works live show that we're here now, if you're listening live. If you're not, if you're hearing this, you're going, that's not live. There's tons of places. True Talk Radio broadcasting this twice a day. And I love that. I love that. And you know what? I like that because they're not the bloated conservatives or liberals over there. And Howie, you know I love you. Tyne Radio in Great Britain, great over there. K-Jag, of course, with the Jigster, Jig Jaguar and all that stuff. And our friends at The Edge, Final Frontier Radio, Dave's Radio, all the stuff, all the ones, Infinity. I know I'm forgetting some, what have you, where you can hear this show again and enjoy it and make more notes if you miss around, because we talk, whether I'm here alone or here with a guest. There's a lot of things, and I don't stop. I'd be on for 12 hours a day if I just stop and explain everything that we talk about or annotate it. So you write it down. Write this down, as Dr. Fabianic said. For all you people who are new to the show, not new people, because you would not understand the show if you are new people. You have just been born. Happy birthday, by the way, if you are listening. You're a new person. We'll be doing... You'll be doing yourself a favor by taking notes when you hear names and places, nouns. When you hear nouns, people, places, and things. If you hear nouns and you go, well, that's interesting, let me write that down. And then later on you go to, and we do not sponsor, we're not sponsored by, or do we endorse any particular search engine. So you can go to anyone you'd like and you can get that going. Put things in there. As I said in the very beginning, and I continually say these things, you will also find it extremely helpful. And I'm really the villain this time around by telling you this. Replenish your precious bodily fluids, because dehydration is the enemy. I say that, and if I've had a nickel for every time I said that on this show, you know I'd be a millionaire. But let me tell you something. I've had some bouts with dehydration, not even understanding it. Isn't that amazing? Here I am talking about replenishing your precious bodily fluids, continually doing what I do, and functioning as I function, as we all should function, regularly in many different ways of processing our food and our in all the things we ingest. And still, I wound up with being dehydrated. So it can happen, especially, although it's happened to me in the summer, and I did not know it. Now I know that this particular thing that happened to me during the summer was dehydration, and that a couple of weeks ago, I was having some symptoms, and it turned out to be that also. So it is important, and isn't it always the case? You know it's like, you know, when the doctor gets sick because he's so busy telling everybody else how to get well. And, of course, the televangelist sins because he's so busy telling everybody not to sin. I don't think maybe that doesn't fit. But in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, replenish your precious bodily fluids. You know what you like, but water. I know I say this all the time. Every beverage is just water that tastes like something else. Which means, of course, every beverage is just water that tastes like some other kind of water. But that's not always true in terms of how your body processes it. It would rather have water. So make sure it's clean and free of protozoa and get yourself some water. And we will gladly go into the subject of this show. And I'm going to start off by playing something. I'm going to get somebody reading a poem by a man named Robert Frost. And then I'm going to talk about, here's a simple one here. I'm going to do the obvious one. Who's reading this? Poetry reading by some guy, spoken verse. I don't know, this might actually be Robert Frost. One of the great American poets, and certainly one of America's, we'll talk about poet laureates, only poet laureates. There aren't a lot of poet laureates. We always have one. We don't know which one is which. Then I'm going to go back and talk about the rock poets who are highly, talk about bloated, we'll talk about bloated. But let's see if this works first. And hope that, you know what I'll do? I'll hope that this doesn't buffer the way I've had those technical problems. Stopping by the woods on a snowy evening is a remarkable, remarkable poem, a famous poem. There's no music to it, but it's lyrical and it's beautiful. And I want you to listen to it. It was written by Robert Frost, who died many years ago. Let's just do it. Let's see if it works. Here we go.
Robert Frost was a farmer in Shaftesbury, Vermont, when he wrote this poem, maybe the most famous of the 20th century, on a summer morning in 1922, after staying up all night. He saw the sunrise and wrote a poem about a snowy evening, as if, he said, he'd had a hallucination.
Stopping by woods on a snowy evening. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near. Between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year, he gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds, the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep.
Okay, stopping by the woods on a snowy evening. There's a lot of interpretations, but of course, there's the simplest interpretation. Let's not look at interpretation though right now. Let's just listen to those words. That was, by the way, the Robert Frost. So I'm very happy that I chose the correct. Isn't YouTube amazing? Absolutely amazing. I'm glad that I chose the true one. Okay, there's that. Now, I want you to think, just listen, you heard that, and of course if you read it, but of course, listening to it is important, because remember what I said, poetry, a lot of people don't understand this, poetry is meant to be said, to be spoken. It's sure, it's written down and we read it, but of course when we read it to ourselves, we're speaking it to ourselves, but you give a poem to someone else, you should read a poem to someone, or someone should read a poem, because that's what reading a poem aloud. Poetry meant to be said. Now, lyrics in songs are meant to be sung, but of course that is spoken. Now, here's an important point. If we look at that and listen to that, Robert Frost, you might not know him, or you might know of him. You may have never heard his voice. He wrote that. That's his composition. That's his poem. Now, too few people know him and understand, even though, as the announcer said, this might be one of the most, think about that, what he said, because it's true, the most popular, well-known poem of the 20th century. Wow. but only to X amounts of people. The bulk of the people existing will consider the words I'm going to tell you, the following words I'm going to tell you, poetry. Rock poet comes from rock music, comes from a man who was considered a rock poet. And if you compare what I'm going to tell you with that, I'm going to say this, then I guess we could play it, but I don't want to play it. I want to say the lyrics, at least part of them. I'm not going to do all of them. You'll know them instantly, and you'll hear the voice, and you'll hear the melody in your head. And more of you will know that than know Robert Frost. That's the great crime of considering rock poets poets. Here's the line. The lines. Imagine there's no heaven. I wonder if you can. No sky above us. A brotherhood of man. I don't even know if that's correct. You know what I'm, but you know. Imagine no possessions. It's very hard to do. I know that's editorial because I'm saying it. But if you look up or read aloud the words to the song Imagine, which is considered one of the great rock poetry spiritual pieces of our time, then you're looking at what the heck is that? Let me tell you something about John Lennon, who wrote that. His greatest influence in terms of words was a man, an Englishman. And I'm not saying John was, as I know, as I hear, was very well read. And a lot of these, the more well read, the lyricists who read classics, whether they be modern classics or they go back to Elizabethan times or, I don't know, caveman times, Greek times, Greeks, the Greeks. We'll find the better lyrics. And certainly there are better lyrics from John Lennon than that. And yet that's the one everyone will remember. It's a Hallmark card. I mean, what is it? Is it a poem? It's a Hallmark card. I'm just thinking through it now. I wonder if you can. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope one day you'll join us and the world will live as one. To me, that's as important as this. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Catch ya, and we can't even say the original one, by the toe. And yet if you read Imagine and you read this, then you'll see what I'm talking about. And remember what I'm saying. John Lennon was one of the better ones. His inspiration, a man named Edward Lear. Let me read you an Edward Lear poem, which I believe, oh boy, I think I could find it. Maybe I could find an Edward Lear poem, maybe the most popular one. An English poet, let's see. Yeah, he's in it. It's fabulous, isn't it? Edward Lear. Edward Lear, an English artist, illustrator, author, and poet, and is renowned primarily for his literary nonsense in poetry and prose. Literary nonsense. Here are some of his nonsensical words. Let me read a poem from Edward Lear. This is what I'm giving you. If you happen to, and we're just talking about John Lennon as the rock poet, the classic rock poet right now. That's all we're talking about is him. If you remember or don't, or if you don't know, then here, John Lennon had two books when the Beatles came out. Two books. And, he writes something. And all they want to do is sell. They get a picture on it and that stupid John Lennon hat. And they wanted to sell Beatles things, anything Beatles. You know, books that John Lennon never could have sold as as products if he was just a writer. Two books, In His Own Right, W-R-I-T-E, and the second one was A Spaniard in the Works. So there's some fun poetry in there, and it's all based on Edward Lear. Let's see, query, Leary, nonsense. Lear sketches and poems. Let me see. Laughable lyrics, a fourth public poems, songs. I'm going to click on something here. And maybe I could read one. Listen to this. And remember, this, and when you hear this, just if you know anything about John Lennon or you've read anything or read anything, you should know this. You should read this guy to really understand anything John Lennon did in terms of how much he loved nonsense and how he liked to put people on and the things that he did for those who were looking into his stuff as more intellectual than he even thought it might be, because he didn't consider himself a poet. The people who consider the rock, the 60s rock people poets are the poets. Is the public? Is that it? The people are, make up the public. I don't remember a lot of them doing it, although Jim Morrison may have walked around thinking he was a fine poet. And we know he wasn't. He just produced, and I'm okay. By comparison to classics, I'm saying this. By comparison to classics, crap. Okay, Love Me Two Times, Baby, Love Me Two Times. Okay, but let's look at this. I just want you to do this for, it's called The Dong with a Luminous Nose. This is this is called a song. It does not have any music to it. But here's Edward Lear. This is the main influence of John Lennon. And I'm going to read you just two verses and see if you even have, if it even brings any John Lennon stuff to your mind. But this is his main influence in terms of lyrics, okay? It's called The Dong with a Luminous Nose. When awful darkness and silence reign over the great Grambulian plain, through the long, long wintry nights, when the angry breakers roar as they beat on the rocky shore, when storm clouds brood on the towering heights of the hills of the Chankly Bore, then, through the vast and gloomy dark, there moves what seems a fiery spark, a lonely spark with silvery rays piercing the coal-black night, a meteor strange and bright. Hither and thither the vision strays, a single lurid light. Slowly it wanders, pauses, creeps. Anon it sparkles, flashes, and leaps. And ever as onward it gleaming glows, a light on the bong tree stems it throws. And those who watch at the midnight hour from hall or terrace or lofty tower cry as the wild light passes along, "The dong! The dong! The wandering dong through the forest goes! The dong! The dong! The dong with a luminous nose." You got it? So when you read, and you can, because I think you can still buy these books, A Spaniard in the Works, and a lot of things that John Lennon did, and you listen to his lyrics, a lot of them, not just very popular, you're going to hear Edward Lear. Now, to be so classically inspired to be neo-postmodern in that respect is a great thing. And a couple of the so-called pop rock classic rock lyricists have done some wonderful things. I would be remiss, of course, if we don't mention Bob Dylan, only because he was so well read and he's so borrowed from classics, English literature, poetry, Robert Frost. And the reason that the great imagery of Bob Dylan exists is because he was able to contort and manipulate what already was brilliant. And every poet does that, or did that, See, a lot of poems, because they're all influenced by someone else. And he happened to be a guy who put it into that the whole folk movement in the 50s was very poetry-oriented. They were not musically oriented. And then folk songs were, music was just the soundscape for lyrics. It was much more important. Certainly different than the pop stuff that went on in the 50s that was pop, mainstream. I've mentioned in the past that one of my inspirations in broadcasting, Steve Allen had a routine where he took 50s rock and roll lyrics, popular 50s rock and roll lyrics, and he read them without the music. To show that they're funny. They're just, it's a funny routine because they're funny. Without the music, they're funny. They don't read as poems because they're not poetry, because the lyrics of that are not. And although you can take many rock lyrics and read them, they do belong in the songs that they are a part. But still, so the Steve Allen routine, like for instance, instead of singing this song, he would say, "Get out of that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans. Get out of the kitchen and rattle those pots and pans." Which are the first two lines, or the first one line that's said twice of Shake, Rattle, and Roll, which isn't even the hit of Shake, Rattle, and Roll itself is a remake of Clarence Frogman Henry's version. I think he wrote it. But when Bill Haley and the Comets get it, don't you see the levels of this thing? It's unbelievable. When Bill Haley and the Comets get it, it's completely different. It goes from black to white. It's brighter. From whence comes this? From whence? Listen to me. I'm speaking. Remember I say don't talk old English. Oldie. O-L-D-E. Don't talk old English. I say that. From where comes Shake, Rattle, and Roll? A great line. There's a great line in there. I'm like a one-eyed cat peeping in a seafood store. I'm like a one-eyed cat peeping in a seafood store. He says it twice. But blues, the blues poetry, with its slants and its, I mean, that's all from, you know, that's all from the days of slavery. If there was not slavery, we wouldn't have the blues. We would not have the blues. It was created by the feeling and the emotion. That was their poetry. Today, and I've said this before too, because I'm always running into people of my own generation who say, "Oh, I write to, listen to those rap lyrics. Holy, holy, you know, I mean, if I listen to Jim Morrison, you know, talking about what, the Leaping Lizard or whatever, you know, and love me two times, light my fire, 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 light my fire." You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, "Baby, you can light my fire." Oh, yeah. And how is that not more popular than Stopping in the Woods by a Snowy Evening? Come on, come on, come on, come on, touch me, baby. And this is old Jim Morrison. Come on, come on, come on, come on, touch me, baby. Can't you see that I am not afraid? What was that promise that you made? Why won't you tell me what he said? What was that promise that you made? Nobody knows what he's talking about. I have no idea. And, you know, who? Okay. Doesn't work with that. But you put it in the music. Look, it's clever. But it's not classic. You cannot compare these people. They're in their own world of lyricism. They're in their own world of catchy, clever, not classic. They are the clever, not the classic. But many of them have classic roots, and those are the most well-read. Now, Bob Dylan, of course, would be the most well-known, and though people don't think he's well-read, you know, today, you will hear, and over the years, you have heard people quote Bob Dylan lyrics they quote Bob Dylan lyrics. And the things that the things they quote are because it's because probably people heard it or people, you know, said that that was Bob Dylan. It's like, yeah, well, you know, it wasn't. It was Bob Dylan's translation of something that was said, but nobody read beyond 1890 or 1900, whatever. You know, we get into these pop culture swarms of material, and people get credit for things that they have redone. This is neo-postmodernism, of course. But the ones who are being quoted, if they're being quoted, the good ones that are being quoted, and there's tons of quotes. I don't know why people quote Led Zeppelin lyrics. Oh, squeeze my lemon. Hey, there's a poem. Squeeze my lemon. I got a whole lot of love. 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 What's the difference between that and shake it up, baby? Twist and shout. Come on, come on, come on, come on, baby. Work it all out. See, lyrics that are supposed to, good rock lyrics, good pop lyrics, are supposed to complement the music. And those do. They're clever, but they're not classic. So lifting the authors of these 60s classic rock, and you know it's classic rock. That's just classic rock, they said. Who said? The people who packaged that particular bunch of music for the generation that was getting older. Here's a new format, classic rock. You remember this when you were, you know, when it was new. So it was like, you know, so it was one pill makes you larger, another makes you small. And the ones that mother gives you don't do anything at all. Yeah, it works in the context of Grace Slick. And of course, the drug poem. Those are the drug poems. Okay, the drug poems, and I think some of Lennon's are drug induced. We know Jim Morrison. I mean, come on. I mean, this, you know, and this is the end. This is the end. This is the end. And you know what? Every once in a while, the Doors, his group, would stop and start playing, and he would recite stuff. And it was like, what the heck? What the heck? I mean, even then I was going, what the heck? Well, I was doing that because I was, in all my snobbery, I was reading the classics from before. Because in the 50s, I got a taste of the good stuff. Because in the 50s, those people who were writing folk music and looking around, so like Bob Dylan, they were looking at the real stuff, the Italian poets, the English poets, the contemporary classics, not the Robert Frost. E. Cummings. Does anyone out there know E. Cummings? It's all in small letters, lowercase. E. Cummings. You don't even have to put the periods there. He enforced and practiced. He didn't create, but he enforced a style, a free form style, that looks like something when you read it, but it also designed for you to read it a certain way, using very odd configurations. Now, you know, people who put together things from, they used to be typewriters, but you know, characters on the keyboards, they put together characters and they make, you know, smoke or you make clouds and they do all this stuff, you know. Well, E. Cummings, if you look, and I hope you're writing this, write this down. If you write this stuff down, you get an idea of what I'm talking about. By going and seeing, because a lot of this stuff is available on your internet. I want you to know, I want you to get through this stuff. Because there's a world out there of great stuff. People are intimidated by the classic poets, just like they're intimidated by Shakespeare because they spoke different ways or you're supposed to, you know, and then immediately people say, oh, that's that intellectual stuff, poetry. Poetry gets such a bad rap. And rap, look at rap, and I go back to rap poetry. That's R-A-P, not W-R-A-P. Rap poetry, that's the poetry of the streets. It was something new. I don't care what they're talking about. Listen to the beat. Listen to the rhythm. Poetry is rhythm. It's rhythm and sound. It's got its own beat. And that's why it's often spoken. And it should be spoken. The Greeks so embraced a poetry that they gave laurels, what they called laurels to poets, and poets that got laurels were commissioned to write about certain events. And the laurel, of course, is that, you know that thing, if you see in old Roman movies where it's like green and leaves, it's kind of like a leafy crown, a laurel. And they used to give those as they place it on top of the head of the person who was being rewarded or awarded or respected or whatever. And that's where laureate comes from, poet laureate. So countries will appoint a poet laureate, and that poet will be writing about certain events and be given commissions, he or she, given commissions to write certain poems for certain events, and they will say the poetry. That's a great respect for poetry. Also, we all know that over the past, I don't even know how long, maybe let's say a decade, the idea of poetry slams have been popular. And this really brought some poetry back to life. Poetry slams, you can look it up. There's many definitions for them, but they're energetic, screaming, and very performed. Let's just say performed poetry. It's poetry said aloud. It's a poetry slam, and they use often very strong, not just strong language, but strong performances for these poems, and that's fascinating because it brings back no music. They don't do it in front of music. Or over music. They just do it. And it's you go and watch a stand-up comic is talking the jokes, saying the things, and you're what are you not doing? You're not, you're listening, obviously. And, so the poetry slams have become, that was a real boost for poetry, although a lot of poetry lovers didn't go for the poetry slam thing. And yet, I think it's wonderful because what did it do? Poetry slams allows for more poetry, and that's what you need. That's what we all need. We need more of that. Okay, so where was I? I was talking about the rock poets, and who are quoted these days. Why, to reach that audience of those people? What, the Woodstock Nation? Those guys, those gals, those people? Is that it? I don't know. Yes, probably. And how it's marketed. How it's marketed. So you see, I think you owe it to yourself, and we're going to go more into this after the top of the hour, more owe it to yourself to look more deeply into, and we're going to go into a lot more that you could write down these names. Write down the poets, look into them. Go and buy some books on Amazon or wherever you can buy books. Put them on your Kindle. Put it on your wherever you got this stuff. Read them. And look at them and read them and read them again. They're this small. You don't have to read them. Read them again. Say them aloud. Read them in your room by yourself. Or read them to your wife or your lover or the person you live with or your mate. Read them to your children. Let your children read. Try to read them to you if you're older and you have children. Well, you don't have to be older to have children, by the way. My name is Frank Catola. My man whose name adorns the title of the show. I still exist. I'm still here. We'll be back shortly. Let's talk more coming up. More E.E. Cummings, Shelley Byron, Edward Estlin Cummings. That's the double E's. And we're going to read some of that. We're going to talk about some of that and tell you about a great site, which we're endorsing for no money whatsoever, and where I'm decided to toss some of my actual serious stuff. Uh-oh, am I kidding or what? Yeah.
Cthulhu Chronicles. The internet talk show from the neo-postmodern world.
With video games, I always check the rating and content descriptors on the package. But there are times when I'd like more detail about what's in the game. That's why I love these new rating summaries. They provide an in-depth description of a game's content to help me decide if it's okay for my kids to play. Rating summaries are free and available on my smartphone or at home online.
For more information about video game ratings and rating summaries, go to ESRB.org.
This is Chicago-style hot dog here. I'm not feeling too good. Turns out, along with all the other bad things my cholesterol does, they say it's a risk factor for strokes. Strokes? Sheesh. Good news from National Stroke Association. Exercising, eating right, and asking your doctor about medicines that can help lower your cholesterol, like statins, may reduce the risk of a first stroke. And if you've already had a stroke, it's even more important you lower your cholesterol.
Lower your chances of stroke by controlling your cholesterol. Visit stroke.org today.
Hey, how you doing? This is Joe Walsh. I'm speaking on behalf of Rad. It's okay to rock and roll, right? But don't drive home drunk. If you're drunk, call me up. I have a limo. I'll come and get you.
I'll sleep all day, out all night. I know where you're going.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Skill by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
Hi, I'm Julian Lennon. Are you in the band? Join me and band together for Lupus to support the Lupus Foundation of America and its efforts to provide research, education and support for all people living with lupus. Visit lupus.org to learn more about this chronic disease affecting 1.5 million Americans and find out how to join the band today.
There's nothing un-American about Molotov Memoirs by Frank Cotolo, illustrated by T. Stephen Gessick. Why, this is Americana at its best. Literature, drama, conflict. It's everything I remember and things I think I remember through a storied life of history in show business, politics, and celebrated people's lives. It's me, Frank Cotolo, inviting you to buy Molotov Memoirs. Go to blurb.com and put in my name, Frank Cotolo, and get Molotov Memoirs. Buy a copy for your friends, buy a copy for your lovers and your haters, everybody. This is America!
Everybody's voting for the friendly voice. Radio, the people's choice. Music, weather, sports, and news. It's radio. The people choose. Everybody's swing it to the swing it, boys. Of radio, the Piedmont's choice. Big fry, small fry, dawn to dawn. It's radio that turns them on. Swing it.
My name is Frank Cotullo, and the man whose name adorns the title of the show. And you are here as I chronicle Y2K plus 13, 13th season, the new millennium. Every time I say that, I get chills. Either that or it's because it's like 5 degrees. And it's unbelievably cold. But, you know, what are you going to say? I mean, look at this. It's wintertime, and people are walking around going, wow, is it cold? And I do it, too. It's like, of course. It's winter. It's like, of course it's cold. I know it's cold. Boy, it's brutal out there. I love that phrase. Boy, it's brutal out there. With a point. Out there? We all know what they're talking about. We are talking about, of course, rock poetry versus classic poetry and the importance of classic poetry and how it, as an art form is just wonderful on its own and how it's often buried by the very popularity and money making ability of people who are put on pedestals. People, there's an alliteration. People who are put on pedestals for poetic and praised poetically. People who are put on pedestals and praised poetically for rock music lyrics. You know, someone who wrote an awful lot about the rock lyric poetry on its own was somebody who has been a great fan and friend, I should say, of this show for years and opened a lot of doors when internet radio would not be entered by mainstream people. The man named Paul Williams, I'm not talking about the guy who wrote the songs, I'm talking about the father of rock journalism and the man who started Crawdaddy magazine, which, of course, spun off to Rolling Stone magazine and just started a plethora of publications based on the rock music culture, pop culture rock music, not just the sales and the commercialism. Paul Williams is a great writer of that. He's a very, very ill man now. And if you go to paulwilliams.com, anything you can give to Paul's to Paul's sustenance would be great. A wonderful person who cannot be on this show again ever, and we think of him a lot, and we owe him a lot. So many people who have been on this show, based on the fact that he decided at one point that internet radio was worth coming here to talk about. Stuff, anything, to be a guest. One time, very hard to get a guest, but that's all part of internet radio history. Let's talk about this right now. But I'm bringing him up because I'm also going to bring up a guy named Robert Christgau. I think it's Christgau. I've read this guy before, but I recently found him, and you could find him. If you look up rock poets, you could find a whole bunch of articles and things about this. He wrote a book called Rock and Roll is Here to Stay, and and I'm not going to read this whole thing, but in December 1967, in a magazine called Cheetah, Rock Lyrics Are Poetry is the name of it, and then parentheses, maybe. Rock Lyrics Are Poetry, maybe. And he wrote a couple of things I'm going to read to you right now. I want to, from this article. Just so we could once again, then we're going to go into some more classics, and you'll see how much fun that can be. I want to say right now that none of the categories I'm going to be using are worth much. All but a few artists resist categories. The good ones usually confound them all together. So a term like rock isn't possibly vague. It denotes, if anything, something historical rather than aesthetic. Mass art and kitsch are pretty vague as well. Let's say that mass art is intended only to divert, entertain, pacify. Man, Mantovani and Jacqueline Suzanne, Muscle Beach Party as a movie, etc. Kitsch is more snobbish a concept and a more sophisticated product. It usually has the look of slightly out-of-date avant-garde in order to give its audience the illusion of aesthetic pleasure. Whatever that might be. An important distinction, I think, is that many of the craftsmen who make kitsch believe thoroughly in what they are doing. That may be true of the creators of mass art too, but their attitude is more businesslike. They don't always worry about art, only commercial appeal. Now, here he goes, saying a lot of things I said. The songwriter who seems to sound most like a poet is Bob Dylan. Dylan is such an idiosyncratic genius that it is perilous to imitate him. His faults, at worst annoying and best invigorating, ruin lesser talents. But imitation is irresistible. Who can withstand Paul Nelson of Little Sandy Review, who calls Dylan the man in every sense revolutionized modern poetry? American folk music, popular music, and the war, and the whole of modern day thought. That's what he said. Jack Newfield said in the Village Voice, wandering on about symbolic alienation, new plateaus for poetic, content conscious songwriters. Put poetry back into song. Reworks T.S. Eliot's classic line, Bastard Child of Chaplin, Celine, and Hart Crane. While serving up tidbits from Dylan's corpus, some of which don't look so tasty on a paper plate. However inoffensive, the ghosts of electricity howls in the bones of her face, sounds on vinyl, it is silly without the music. Poems are read or said, songs are sung. Robert knew exactly what we're talking about here. This is 1967, when people were starting to go crazy for this stuff. And reviewers, as he mentioned and quoted, were calling Bob Dylan the guy who changed it. All he did was, okay, but you see what we're saying? Okay, now, listen to how he talks about one of Dylan's songs. Remember, poems are read or said, and he talks about a bad poem, which is a very popular Dylan song, My Back Pages. And Robert Christgau, I guess that's how you say it, Christgau, says, My Back Pages is a bad poem. But it is a good song, supported by a memorable refrain. The music softens our demands. The importance of what is being said somehow overbalances the flaws. And Dylan's delivery in his version, many of you know the hit was done by the Byrds, he sounds as if he's singing a hymn at a funeral. He adds a portentous edge not present just in the words, because it is a good song. My Back Pages can be done in other ways. And here's the Byrds version. Depends on intricate, up-tempo music that pushes the words into the background. However much they mean to David Crosby, the lyrics, except for the refrain, could be gibberish and the song would still succeed. Repeat, Dylan is a songwriter, not a poet. A few of his most perfect efforts, Don't Think Twice or Just Like a Woman, are tight enough to survive on the page, but they are exceptions. Such a rash judgment assumes that modern poets know what they're doing. It respects the tradition that runs from Ezra Pound and William Carlos Williams down to Charles Olson, Robert Creeley, and so many others that you might not know. The tradition that regards Allen Ginsberg as a good poet, perhaps, but a wild man. Dylan's work, with its iambics, its clackety-clack rhymes, and its scattergun images, makes Ginsberg's look like a model of decorous diction. An art advances through technical innovation, modern American poetry assumes and sometimes eliminates metaphoric ability, concentrating on the use of line and rhythm to approximate or refine speech. The reduction of language to essentials and tone of voice. Dylan's only innovation that he sings, a good way to control tone of voice, but not enough to revolutionize modern poetry. He may have started something just as good, but modern poetry is getting along fine. Thank you. This is a person writing in 1967 and understanding all this stuff I'm telling you. And then, oh boy, did he get a lot of flack? You bet he got a lot of flack. Because this is the poet, he's a poet. And the poets of those of that time, and many of the modern poets, as I said, that you didn't know. But there's some wonderful lines in there that Chris Gow says that reflects what poetry is, not needing the music, and how music does, in fact, take away from the lyrics, no matter how minuscule or no matter how... You sound like I'm in a submarine. Yeah, because you hear that thing going. That's how cold it is that the boiler just keeps going. It's working and working and working and working. Okay, so... And this is what I'm saying, and this hasn't changed much because so many people, especially from the 60s, who are now this generation, they're now the baby boomers and they're out here doing whatever they do. They don't look back beyond their own generation and look for that, and they look at those lyrics and that stuff as just as what? As their poetry. And it's not because they don't sit around and read the lyrics of these things. They sit around and listen to the songs and the performers. And the performers, more than half of them, they've never picked up a book by E.E. Cummings. They've never picked up a book by George Campbell or Philip Larkin or Adrian Henry or Brian Patton. Not even Charles Bukowski. And Charles Bukowski, who became a very popular poet, even though he was from the Beat era, but became very popular in the 70s. In the 60s through newspaper, renegade newspapers, and the 70s, is definitely not in the same realm as, he is a street poet and a poet, and he, when he would go around, he'd sing songs, he went around reading his poetry, he did poetry readings. Now, someone from that era, you might not know this name, but someone from that era, from this era we're talking about, the very heavily drug-infested, it is drug-infested, area of the 60s and mostly 60s. This stuff was around a lot earlier than that, of course. The beat poets were doing marijuana way before anybody. I don't know when it was illegal, but, jazz musicians with marijuana. Come on. That was going on before. You know, the 60s people didn't invent drugs. Hello. You know, they didn't invent stimuli for artists. Come on, give me a break. A guy named Richard Brautigan, he's a poet. He became a poet. He was a published poet. I got quiet. It's nice. I don't feel like I'm battling the boiler. There's an alliteration. Richard Brautigan, Brautigan, a tortured soul, and I don't know why, but I've read some things about him personally, and the fact that he killed himself, he committed suicide, obviously shows that he was clinically inept of dealing with his own, of his emotions. But he wrote a number of very popular, though heavily criticized by the hierarchy of poetry, of the poetry nation at the time. But Richard Brautigan became very popular without music, and that's what's important to see, to read that stuff, And a book that I was introduced to his book, to the book, oh no, the second book I read was Loading Mercury with a Pitchfork. It's the name, that's the title of that book. It wasn't the first one, though. The first one sounded a lot like Dylan Thomas. Oh, by the way, you know, let's not forget, when you're talking about Bob Dylan, let's not forget that Dylan did read the classics. I mean, he was a songwriter, and he borrowed all this stuff that he wanted. He might not want, he wanted to be known. He wanted to package himself in a certain way, which is why he's not Robert Zimmerman. He's not Robert Zimmerman. He's Dylan, Bob Dylan, Bob from Robert, and Dylan from Dylan Thomas, the Irish poet who has written Do Not Go Lightly Into the Dark Night. I'm not even quoting that correctly. Do not go lightly into the dark night. We can read that again later. You can read it. Look, Dylan Thomas. Look up Dylan Thomas. Under Milk Wood, which is a beautiful kind of play, a poetic play. Under Milk Wood. What's that? Hey, what's that? This kind of stuff I give to my father. He had no idea what was going on. No idea. But not even, he didn't even understand. I'm like a one-eyed cat peeking in a seafood store. So it didn't matter to him. You know, you got to remember one thing, too. Even in terms of classic, you know, these poets, this swarm of the 60s that everyone, you know, this Woodstock junk, all this bloated arts stuff, commercial stuff. It was all commercial stuff. It was all selling, or there wouldn't be all those people at Woodstock. The Woodstock Nation was just all those people who I'm talking about, who were you know, sitting there getting into Jimi Hendrix, singing Purple Haze Is in My Brain. Because they could relate it to that. That was their poetry. And man, I'm not putting down the fact that there are other types of, I'm not trying to be, to put this into a level of snobbery or a hierarchy. What I'm trying to do is say that you can at least understand what we're saying in terms of the classics and not be intimidated and read them and see. You'll find when you read this stuff, you will find things that you know from pop music. When I was inspired in the side of my writing, the portion of my writing that deals with humor and comedy, when I was inspired by Max Schulman's early works, prose, when I was inspired by Max Schulman's early works, I recognized all the Woody Allen stuff, all the stuff that came later, from the one-liners, the TV, all that whole group, all of it, the Algonquin comedy humor people, the stuck-up people from the New York press, it was all that Max Schulman was there. Barefoot Boy with Creek, and here's a guy who read. Did he read? Listen. Max Schulman wrote prose and complete and fascinating comedy that was an incredible comedy and humor that bounced off of George Kaufman and that whole group from the Algonquin Hotel, the snobs of humor, American humor, bounced off of that. And what? Where does he come up with a book called Barefoot Boy with Cheek? Because he read poetry. Because he read the song of Hiawatha. Barefoot Boy with Cheek. It's the name of his first novel. Comes from that. So you've got this. You see, you've got these connections of commerciality with people who are well-read. And the well-read stuff, although it is watered down into commerciality, is good. But it's better. And that's why these critics and stuff were calling Bob Dylan all of these names, these accolades about poetry, because he was disguised by his inspiration. He got it from the classics. He couldn't have done it, and none of the others did it. They didn't do it. The birds, the animals. Let's name some of these other groups from the 60s and 70s. Who wrote lyrics and wrote their own songs? What happened? Nothing happened. They didn't do it. And they didn't know either. They didn't even know about, you know, even the Beatles, the Mercy Beat Poets, Mercy, the River in Liverpool. These guys were not involved with the Skittle groups that created the musical scene that eventually spawned the Beatles. And guys like Tony Harrison, not George Harrison, poets like Tony Harrison, Roger McGorg. I hope I said that one right. McGorg, that's how we used to say it. McGorg, even though it's McGough. Could be McGough, I don't know. Brian Patton, I mentioned before. Adrian Henry. The Mersey Beat Poets didn't even affect the Skittle guys. But some of them, you know, like Lennon, was listening to everything and reading certain things. Although Lennon went classic with Edward Lear, as we said before. You see? You get it? You get it? You get got going what we got going here? The smarter, the better the lyricist. The smarter, the better the lyricist. As far as classic rock is concerned, clever, not classic. Let's look at classic in certain ways. Now, I want to tell you that, all this stuff came up because I've dabbled, more than dabbled. I used to edit a poetry magazine, and I was involved with the underground, the poetic underground. And I wrote lots of poetry, and I loved the underground when it existed in small press. And I edited magazines, and I participated, and I was published with these. These poems would not be published anywhere else. You know, all these renegade poems, because I read when I was a kid, when I was younger, and I read when I first started writing poetry. I tried to imitate the classics. I didn't try to imitate what was going on in rock lyrics. I wasn't looking around at those guys and the Woody Herman. Woody Herman was a jazz guy. You know, Bob Dylan's great musical inspiration. Woody. Wasn't the other Woody. Isn't it amazing how I just stopped dead in my tracks? You know, this land is your land, this land is my land, okay. Okay, but the classics are what got me. I read Shelley, and I read him again and again and again and again. It's Percy Bysshe Shelley, whose wife, of course, wrote Frankenstein. Mary Shelley. Percy Bysshe Shelley, who also committed suicide. But he walked into the ocean. That's a very famous historical thing about Percy Bysshe Shelley. I'm sure it's true. But, you know, when poetry is concerned, where all this stuff is concerned, lying, truth, and lies all come together into the... they're in the grasp of what Chris Gow said. What did he say? Poetry. I'm looking for this part again. Art advances tech. The modern American poetry assumes and sometimes eliminates metaphoric ability, concentrating on the use of line and the rhythm to approximate or refine speech. The reduction of language to essentials and tone of voice. This is the most important. I couldn't have put it better, and I wouldn't have tried. Okay? And almost 1967, we're still talking now about this. So anyway, like I said, I found out of the clear blue sky a place where a lot of young poets and people are now congregating on the internet. I have been very critical in the past as being an editor of poetry and stuff that people who want to write think they can write poetry even if they cannot write. Remember that if you're a better lyricist because you read classic poetry, then you'd be a better poet because you know how to write prose, because you know the language, because you know English. But a lot of people who get into poetry, and I know this as being a poetic, I wasn't a poetic editor. I was an editor of poetry. I'm a poetic editor. Excuse me. Jesus, to take thyself. No, I was an editor of poetry. I would get so much in the mail. These people never ever wrote a word in their lives, and they're writing poetry because why? Because it's easy. They don't have to worry about because it's so free. You have to earn the right to be able to write good poetry, even if it's not and does not equal or come anywhere near the masters. You don't have to try, but you can learn, and you can learn more by knowing how to write simple sentences so that you can write poetry. Because what are you trying to do? You're trying to do what Chris Gow says here. In a certain way, concentrate on the use of line and rhythm to approximate or refine speech, the reduction of language to essential, and tone of voice. Poems are said or read. Poems are said or read. Now we say when they're read, but they're said. They work so much better when they're said. And poets sometimes, you know, read their own poetry better than they read almost anything they could put behind them. But this, so anyway, I'm saying, like, well, isn't there a place that I could put, well, what's going on with poetry on the net? So I find this place and I immediately start posting. I join it. I go into it. You can now get me at hellopoetry.com. Just plunk in Frank Cotolo, and I'm putting up a lot of poems, poems I've written over the years, which were all inspired by people, for people. Well, they're all inspired by my serious self. Yes, there is a serious self. And I'm going, well, I'm going to do this because I've been thinking about putting it together, but I don't think anybody wants to buy it or read it. Am I going to buy? Why should I put together all, but get my poems, put them all together and sell a poem book? I don't have it. They do not have a commercial, it doesn't have a commercial, tint. And I'm not probably going to sell any of them. And I'm not going to be a famous poem, but I like a lot of these. And that's important for your own work. And I would love to give readings and do it, but I'm going to put this up on the, see who else. Who writes poems these days, younger and older, people who might be literate and people who are illiterate but think that poetry is the way, you know, whatever, whoever, I don't know. I'm going to put this meat on the ground of this cage and see what animals come to devour it. Like it, taste it, or what have you. I've already got some responses. Hello, poetry. Now, I'm not telling you to go there just because of my stuff, but they have a great section, too, which is random poets. Random poetry. You click this thing, these two arrows that are interwoven. This is a very simple site. It's black and white. It's not, you know, it's poetry. So there's a lot of air, there's a lot of white space. But it's great because you can click on random poet. Get a random poem, and you can come up with some of the classics. So it's not like you have to go out and buy Homer. You really don't have to read the Iliad or the Odyssey or the Odyad or the Ilyssy. Playing with words. That's where the humor, a lot of humor comes from, playing with words. So words are very important. Playing in serious and humor, it's all a part of using it as music. Here's a poem from 600 B.C., Sappho. Now, everyone knows Sappho, S-A-P-P-H-O, because it's connected to, that is correct, it's connected to female homosexuality. Sappho was a very famous poet. This is 600 B.C. It's called, "It Was You, Athis, Who Said," that's the title, "It Was You, Athis, Who Said, Sappho, if you will not get up and let us look at you, I shall never love you again. Get up, unleash your suppleness, lift off your Chian nightdress, and, like a lily leaning into a spring, bathe in the water. Cleis is bringing your best purple frock and the yellow tunic down from the clothes chest. You will have a cloak thrown over you and flowers crowning your hair. Praxinoa, my child, will you please roast nuts for our breakfast? One of the gods is being good to us. Today, we are going to at last to Mytilene, our favorite city, with Sappho, loveliest of its women. She will walk among us like a mother with all her daughters around her when she comes home from exile. But you forget everything. There's also something on the bottom here. You could get a daily poem from this. They send you a poem. I imagine they're sending you poems from this site. There's a bunch of people on here, young and old, and it's great to see them getting into this. It's wonderful for me. Let's do another random poem. Where does it go? Yeats, chosen. William Butler Yeats, 1865 to 1939. Yeats, who a lot of people who don't know him, I remember in school, and the poem is by William Butler Yeats. It's Y-E-A-T, and everyone, you know, the teacher would laugh, because you have to learn how to say Yeats, not Yeats, but they pronounce it Yeats phonetically. It's called Chosen. These are the kind of poems I implore you to read and read again. The lot of love is chosen. I learnt that much, struggling for an image on the track of the whirling zodiac. Scarce did he my body touch, scarce sank he from the west, or found a subterranean rest on the maternal midnight of my breast. Before I had marked him on his northern way, and seemed to stand, although in bed I lay, I struggled with the horror of daybreak. I chose it for my lot. If questioned on my utmost pleasure with a man by some new married bride, I take that stillness for a theme where his heart, my heart, did seem, and both adrift on the miraculous stream where, wrote a learned astrologer, the zodiac is changed into a sphere. Now you first hear that, and if you don't think of meaning, you just, and I hope I read it, and I know there's people out there going to say, well, it was a terrible reading, but you don't read this stuff well. You know, but I didn't write this, and I haven't memorized it, so I haven't practiced it as I would with lyrics, you know, lines in movies and stuff. But that's the best I could do from Yeats and a book called and a poem called Chosen. But when you listen to it, I'm going to do another one now, not from Yeats. Who am I doing? No, this is a new guy. I'm going to go on. I want to see some old guys. Emily Bronte, 1818 to 1848, a death scene. I won't do this whole thing. It's gigantic. But listen to the meter. Listen to the beat. Listen to the rhythm. Listen to how Christgau described it. Listen to the rhythm to approximate, which refines the speech, the reduction of the language to essentials, and the tone of voice. Voice, not necessarily the voice speaking it, but the voice of the poet, of the words, who's speaking. The poet speaks. That's one of the reasons you say it out loud. A death scene. O day, he cannot die when thou so fair art shining. O sun, in such a glorious sky, so tranquilly declining. He cannot leave thee now while fresh west winds are blowing, and all around his youthful brow thy cheerful light is glowing. Edward, awake, awake, the golden evening gleams warm and bright on Arden's lake. Arouse thee from thy dreams. Beside me on my knee, my dearest friend, I pray that thou, to cross the eternal sea, wouldst yet 1 hour delay. I hear its billows roar, I see them foaming high, but no glimpse of a further shore has blessed my straining eye. I stop right there. There's a lot of, this rhymes. Now, I'm going to talk about rhymes here for a second, because it's okay. You know, when you do a sonnet, there are certain poems that have forms, and you have to follow these forms. And I'm really into the sonnet, and I've only written, and when I started studying the sonnet through the master, the bard himself, studying sonnets, I believe you just have to. There's many of them, and they're good, but, you know, you read Shakespeare sonnets, and you get the feel of it. and you learn the rhyme scheme and everything. And then writing it is, to me, it's better than a puzzle. It's better than, I hate crossword puzzles. I hate all those things but to put together a sonnet and have the meter, the beat, the tempo, all that stuff together, that's great. I'm able to do that. I'm able to concentrate. I'm able to, because I love it. Unlike, a free-flowing poem. And I haven't posted any of my sonnets. I may eventually, but I haven't. So I'm doing that. But the sonnets, I mean, there are sonnets and there are certain ways. So, and there are ones that rhyme. And there are poems that have certain rhyme schemes. So if I, a death scene, four lines, the two lines match two lines, rhyme two lines. So, O day, he cannot die when thou so fair art shining. Now the next one's got to rhyme with die and shining. O sun, in such a glorious sky, so tranquilly declining. See, I'm sorry. I really am sorry that I'm not, I don't even think I'm doing some of these things justice. That's why you got to have Morgan Freeman. I have some real great sounding voices. I think I do my own pretty well. But, you know, who's next here? Oh, another death scene. This. Oh, what happened? The sea. Lewis Carroll. Hey, Lewis Carroll, 1832 to 1898. Here's another guy like Edward Lear. He's from that area of nonsense. Lewis Carroll wrote Alice in Wonderland. You all know that. There's something made commercial that has connotations, political and social connotations, is buried into it, and yet it could be enjoyed by a little girl, a little boy, talking about the little girl who went into Wonderland, blah, 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 and the Queen of Spades, and blah blah blah. Here's one called The Sea. How long does this go? Oh, this is monstrously long. it still has HTML stuck in it. Let me read you two from The Sea, Lewis Carroll, 1832, 1898. Well, you didn't live too long, did you? There are certain things, a spider, a ghost, the income tax, gout, an umbrella for three, that I hate. But the thing that I hate the most is a thing they call the sea. Pour some salt water over the floor. Ugly, I'm sure you'll allow it to be. Suppose it's extended a mile or more. That's very like the sea. Beat a dog till it howls outright. Cruel. But all very well for a spree. Suppose that one did so day and night. That would be the sea. He always writes C, capital letters, S-E-A. See how you write, how you actually put down on the paper, or on the type or whatever, on the font. I mean, how you actually do it, capitals, and whether it does have its own kind of grammar to it. Who invented those spades of wood? Who was it cut them out of the tree? None, I think, but an idiot could, or one that loved the sea. He's saying, now here's something where you could take from Bob Dylan, who could write 34 verses in a song, and they're all about the same thing. They're just, it's the same idea. There's no complex ideas. So when you see a Bob Dylan song that's got 32, they're all the same feel for that song. Same thing with the poem. He got that from reading poetry, where there are many, many verses, and it's just saying the same thing many, many different ways. If you like coffee with sand for dregs, a decided hint of salt in your tea, and a fishy taste in the very eggs, by all means, choose the sea. And if with these dainties to drink and eat, you prefer not a vestige of grass or tree and a chronic state of wet in your feet, then I recommend the sea. You see how I'm starting to, as I'm reading it, I'm getting the feel of it. He's like, this is how much he hates the sea. Here's the last stanza, verse. Remember, they're called verses too. I try the rocks and I think it cool that they laugh with such an excess of glee, as I heavily slip into every pool that skirts the cold, cold sea. Isn't it funny, in the 1800s, I think it cool. Literally, use hip language, hep language. Is it hip or hep? It's hep, man, hep, man. They said, the Beat Boys, the Beats. We've brought this pop culture to your attention through years and years and years. We told you what Beatles means. Beatles, with, you know, as a phrase, people who were into the beat genre, they were Beatles. Before there were Beatles, but you'll remember Beatles because they want to hold your hand. Oh, I'll tell you something. I think you'll understand when I tell you something. I want to hold your hand. Same with the music. It's just, who wants to hear that? If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, call on me, and I'll send it along with love from me to you. Okay? You know, you could always, and forget about, I don't even want to get into it. I don't want to get into Paul McCartney lyrics, which, you know, for the most part, when he dealt with lyrics having to do with just love and the standard pop genre, as in Michel, and then he uses the French, Michel, ma belle, sans demon, qui va très bien ensemble. These are words that go together well. He just said it, and then it's fine. I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's fine, it works, okay? But, and the only time he ever went abstract that it meant any sense at all was drug-related, when he wrote Fixing a Hole. Fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wondering where it will go. I'm filling in the cracks. I'm trying to remember this by heart, so forget it. Anyway, but most of them are just dumb. Listen to what the man said. There's a Paul McCartney song. Listen to what the man said. He said, do 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 do. He's answered with music. Do 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 do. Listen to what the man said. What man? I don't know. Back to the classics. Edgar Allan Poe. Oh, Edgar Allan Bro. There's a guy who calls himself Edgar Allan Bro. Ay, 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 that's 2010. No, I don't want that. Another random poem. Hey, come on. William Ernest Hanley, 1849 to 1903. Interlude. Oh, the fun and the frolic, that the wind that shakes the barley scatters through a penny whistle tickled with artistic fingers. Elena, they use exclamation points correctly, some of these great old poets. People overuse exclamation points in every possible form of writing. In journalism, you're taught to, you know, just stay away from these things that indicate kinds of speech, which is why I don't want to get into this, like, you know, I hate sounding pedantic. I'm trying to sound fun. This is fun stuff. I'm not trying to sound pedantic. I'm trying to tell you, from what I know, why you should be looking at some of this stuff. And this Hello Poetry website is terrific for that. Because it mixes these new people with old Elizabeth Smart, 1913 to 1986. This is not the Elizabeth Smart who was isn't that the name of the girl who was kidnapped and then, what's her name, Liz Smart? Poem Advising Action by Elizabeth Smart. I'm hiccuping in the meantime. With graceful strategy, the circling hawk whips my circling sorrow to dive and strike. Indiscreet for action, the poison oak thrusts up her flushed face for attack. I just ruined this entire thing. Go read it. And it's tough. And I'm doing a lot of this for the first time. I mean, I don't read these poems ahead. Atropos by John Myers O'Hara, 1870-1944. Atropos, dread, one of the three, holding the thread woven for me. Grimly thy shears, steely and bright, menace the ears left for delight. Grant it may chance, just as they close, June may entrance earth with the rose. Reigning as though bliss to the breath, endless and no whisper of death. when you first hear it, read it, listen. Don't say, what does that mean? What does that, wait, whoa, wow, wow. Remember, it's being compacted, it's being compressed. Language is being put into minimally important words and in a rhythm and a beat. Listen to it first for the beat and the rhythm. Read it again. Read each stanza separately. Look up things you have to look up in terms of words and stuff. Get into it that way. This, I suppose, and I propose, and especially to so many, many of my generation, goes out there, that sits at home, it goes out there, sits at home, and turns on, now what you got, I don't know, it turns on, what do you turn on, I was going to say, turns on their record player, a stereo, or whatever they have, and they listen to these things that these people that they considered so wonderful, these moving songs. All right, okay, you like those songs. Okay, all right, the words fit well. But these are not people, these are not poets. No matter how they strike you, no matter how they move you, no matter what lines you extract that mean anything from, they're all been there before. And they've been said more eloquently, with a better beat, and without music, because poems are read and said. You read them and you say, I was going cold cock there. Just, I was reading and saying some poems I hadn't read either in years or never. So if you'd like to read some of my poems aloud or to whatever, and I don't care what you call them, corny, what have you, just know that they are all inspired by the rhythm and the beat of poems that go back to Shelley and all those other things, and then go read them. Well, you don't have to read mine. Just read theirs, and then read all the people on the Hello Poetry. It's a great site. It's a great site. And I've gotten into this because I think finally releasing some of the rare things I do that are serious. And yes, a lot of them, and I'm not saying corny or what have you, but I have written over the years so many poems to people, to loved ones. And that's how I expressed certain things and how I looked and how I like to look at the work. Because I look and I see and I live. And I often say to people, even my humor, I say, what do you do, Frank? I'm a poet. I am a poet because I see like a poet, because I talk and the rhythm, the dynamics of what I do here and what I have done in music or whatever, but mostly here. This is more poetry than all of the musical lyrics I've written and done. Written and done. Written, well, if I did them myself or given them to other people and other people have performed. And so there's such a poetry. Now, there's things they're called prose poems, which, of course, is prose so beautiful that and so beautiful and so carefully constructed that it's poetry in a sense. It lifts itself off of its prosaic function and is hurtled into the higher realms of the language, which would be poetry. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm a man whose name is the title of the show. Excuse me. And there goes my voice for some reason. I don't know why. Oh, wait, don't dehydrate. I should finish this little bit of water here. Don't dehydrate. Dehydration is the enemy. And if you're getting, during this cold, if you're getting, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV and I can't diagnose you or anyone. But if you're getting something, you're getting very dry in the nose or you're getting blood in your nose. And if your skin feels dry, and if you get this little dizziness that you don't understand, just a room kind of wobbling and nausea, not necessarily from the dizziness, but connected to the dizziness, then look into it. Look into the fact that you might be dehydrated. The best medicine is water. And I apologize for telling everybody, you know, just being, I was very pedantic. I've always been pedantic about that. Replenish your precious bodily fluids. I even found a phrase from someone who made it sound so highfalutin. Don't you love that word? Highfalutin. My mother used to love that. Highfalutin. Let's have a moment of, just one moment of silence for my mom, who's on the 26th of January, will be dead. Wow. I don't even want to talk about how many years. You ready? Here comes a moment of silence for Teresa, who never discouraged me from doing any of the crap I'm doing here right now. Ready? Here goes that moment of silence. And there it goes. That's all you need. That's all you need to remember people, to mourn people, to respect them who have passed on, including who we dedicated this. And I didn't dedicate this to my mom who passed away, but I dedicated it to... Do you believe I did? I know Warren Zevon. And if I had a chance, if I had a couple of minutes, I would play a song by him. But you can find them. And you can find me on Facebook, Frank Cotolo. Again, hellopoetry.com. Go there, check out Frank Cotolo. And everybody, not just me. And look in your, you know, look on your internet for various poets. A lot of the names I gave you. A lot of new names, other names. Just go to, you know, search things. I hope you took notes. If you didn't, listen to this show again. If you want to download it yourself and just go through it, you could go through it with, at where? At where? What did I say? Oh, at, of course, at... Frank Cotolo on Facebook, right, Facebook.com. And you could do there, and you could, what else can you do? You could listen. CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, where you can find, what can you find there? CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. You can find out what we did or what have. No, you don't want to go there. Just email me. Do what you got to do, and just go around. Just Google me, for God's sakes. That's all. You know, you don't have to. there's a moan of disgust. And my name is Frank. I'll be back again next time. I'm going to have The Drain coming up. Maybe next week. Maybe the week after that. Other people. Other things. Fun stuff. CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, of course, is where you can find some of the things that we're going to do. But get to me at Facebook and Twitter, at Frank Cotolo for Twitter, and various other places where, for God's sakes, it's fun. And I will write back to you. If you write to me at fcotolo@yahoo.com. Say anything you want. You could be kind, you could be cruel, I don't care. We're neo-postmodernists. Stay warm, wash your hands continually, every chance you get, everything you touch, every person you touch. Wash your hands. We'll be here again, hopefully next time, and all over the place during the week. Good night, Mrs. Ernstweil, wherever you may be. See, I changed it because I wanted to. think poetic. Think poetic. And don't think too much. Just feel it and have fun with it all. I'll leave you now because I have nothing more to say.